That's I think that's a military term. Blowback is a military term, I think. I don't know. Marion's not answering me, so. Okay, never heard that way. Okay, so. I know that there's like, I know that the word that we use that is definitely rooted in a military term, it's called snafu.
Oh, dear Lord, I know that.
I know. If you ever watch Saving Private Ryan, you learned a couple more of those acronyms that became words. Like, snafu has worked its way into the English language as a real word, but the people from World War II would know it in a different context as an acronym, which is the first letter means something. Situation normal, all, and then the F, you can just imagine what that means, up. So that's basically what it, you know, that's how words get created. So it's a good word. I like it, it's a good word. But then when I found out where it came from, I was like, should I use that word ever again? But, you know, I'm just rambling till people come in here. This is like wasting time. Okay, let's not waste time. This time together. You're here. You know you're here for the writer's workshop, right? And I asked a couple others, so we'll see if they come, but they may not show up to tell you, so you may just get my mind, which is, you know, not always good for like a round table kind of thing and discussion. But I'm just interested in why did you come to listen to me? You love reading and writing? Anyone else? Ciara already does writing. She's a professional writer. She's actually been paid for work. Yes? Mindy? Why are you here? Oh, you love to read and write. I know that. That's right. Okay. Pastor Texier has written, so he's on his second book, third book?
Five.
Okay, that's good. Five books. So that's written in French. You know, which is his language, so that's good. And anyone else written a book in here? You've written a book?
Two
books. On what's the topic?
Well, one is on natural detoxification.
Okay.
And the other is a cookbook, but it goes to finding your roots, your ethnic roots, and eating according to your...
So I'm a Lithuanian, and I should eat Lithuanian. But I'm also Polish, so I should eat Polish. I'm going to have Polish sausage tonight. Because it's Ostrowski's down there, made by real Polacks who came to America and has set up a sausage shop down in East Baltimore. It's still there. So I'm going to go and get one of those tonight at some point. But anyway, I didn't know that. I didn't know that your DNA from your nationality actually, like, you know, that means like for French, it's a bread and cheese, right? Vegetables, I was in the south of France, and they kept bringing food to me. Like, it was this food, and then there was this plate of food, and then there was the cheese. And then after the cheese, there was the yogurt. And then after the yogurt, there was the dessert. And I was like, maybe that's a south thing. I don't know. Never have. Okay, let's pray so I can do something productive with this time that you're with me. All right, Lord, thank you for blessing us and for this time together. Our fellowship here to be around these things and encouragement in this process and in what we're doing. In Jesus' name, amen. So this process that we're talking about is something that is really important to us as believers, because we know that as Christians we are word-centered people. We know that when God created the heavens and the earth, and then when it was without form and void, it was a wreck and a ruin, as it says in some translations. It was chaos, wasn't ordered. God said, let there be light, and it, you know, revealed there's definition. So writing, any kind of writing that we do, is really about creating definition. And if you're here and you're wondering, how do I become a writer? The way that I answer that question in classes that I teach is that you are a writer when you decide to be a writer. When you say you are a writer, then you create the identity that you are a writer. Now, it's up to you to live in that identity. Now, when you become a Christian, you live in the identity. You become a born-again believer. You live in the identity that God has given you. And so you are really making a choice about this process, this creative process that is putting things, putting words together. And this process is a lot more like plumbing than it is, anything like this is like we get caught up in the idea of the art of everything without the basic foundation of things. Any kind of art is like sort of a marriage of manual labor, discipline, skill development, and then creativity, imagination. But nothing really happens until you've like got the skill development down or the practice down or the rehearsal down. And that's really the thing that makes you are a writer when you decide to be one. You say, I am a writer, and then you begin to write. That's really the starting process. You begin to write because you want to write. Now, you know, that's a decision you make, and then after that you have to practice. You have to sort of take the steps to put things down the way that you want on paper or in your computer. How many write on paper? All right. I do too. I find that like to be very important, like writing on paper. I do. I have Moleskine notebooks. I have like a whole drawer full of them. I've been using them probably since 2005. When I was a journalist in the newspaper, all of my writing was basically done on the computer because of deadlines. Just like get into the computer, write things. You have a deadline. My deadlines were tight. I covered sports. A lot of those things happened at night. The stories had to be, you know, you had to produce 500 to 1,000 words within 15 minutes to an hour and a half. And they had to be correct, and they had to be creative, and they had to hold people's interest, and they had to get all the facts into the story. And then, of course, there was editors that were back there that were sort of catching some of my faux pas, to use a French phrase, you know, the mistakes that I would make, and that would happen. That was writing as a profession. So, but then when I left the newspaper business and, you know, started like using, I've always used like paper and pencil, really. I use pencils. TUL pencils are very good, mechanical pencils. I prefer the 0.5 ones. You know, and they, you know, they fill up a Moleskine notebook. I could fill up a Moleskine notebook probably in 30 days, maybe 20 days. It depends on where I am. Yes. Oh, I'll show you one. I got them. Moleskine notebooks. I think they're from France originally. I don't mean to say that everything's from France, but a lot of worthwhile things are from France. Correct, Pastor Tex? Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I need to work with pen and paper.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is all three of my children who are bright and articulate,
mm-hmm,
and educated here,
yeah,
do the same. You know, I didn't start with technology, but they're very technologically oriented, and they also start with pen and paper.
I don't know a psychological, philosophical reason for it, but these are Moleskine notebooks. You can get these in various sizes. You can get, if you like big ones, you can, there's a big one. There's a big one that he likes the big one. I prefer these small ones because I can put them in my, you know, this is actually like maybe therapy for me because I can get agitated in traffic. I can get agitated waiting in a doctor's line. I can get agitated for that. So it's like I started taking these Moleskine notebooks and a pencil and just started like scribbling out my agitation. You know, like make your complaint known unto God. You know, don't use cuss words, you know, although you think them. They don't have to be transmitted to paper. You have to find your way. There's no, you know, that's why I wish somebody else was here to say this, but there's no right way to do this very personal kind of work. It's like I really emphasize like you start with your identity. You do have something to say. You are a creative person. You have an imagination that's given to you by God. Some imaginations are more active than others. And so some books are like full of fantasy and full of, you know, intensity and suspense and those kind of things. I am not that kind of writer. You know, I've never written like a novel like that. Although I've been, you know, I've written, you know, some of the plays that we've seen here, performed here, written the premises and then also some of the scenes for the play. Like, so, you know, I did have a hand in like designing this year's play, but a lot of that was done also by Leah Vanderwalker. She created some of the scenes. I created some of the back-end scenes, and she created a lot of the front-end scenes. So how that, you know, so that is maybe where I, the most outlet I have in using my imagination and creating something that's you know, like, because I'm making a person, I started with the idea, I created the premise of who Pilate's wife was out of, you know, out of just one line in the Bible or one verse in the Bible. So I thought about that. I just sketched something out. It happened at the previous year's Easter play. I was riding home what we would do next, and I got this idea, you know. So that was that, because the previous year's play was what one? That was the one where my son was a thief on the cross who got saved in hell. I mean, got saved and went to paradise. Got saved on the cross, went to paradise. So that one also was like I just sort of made that, made those stories up out of my mind. So I have, I guess, written some things that are not nonfiction, some things that are out of you know, that are fiction, that are made up. So this is the my pattern. So I fill these up, and just about everything I write starts in a book like this. So just, you know, all the messages that I preach usually start in a book like this. I keep this by my Bible, and sometime when I'm writing, you know, I'll get an idea for a whole kind of message. I write my I go to Dundalk, I write my messages out word for word, but then I don't preach from the paper. I write it out and then I give it to the people to take home with them. So that's, you know, that's the way I, you know, it's just a way of I don't know, it's just a way of doing things. Do it, you know, there's no right way to do this. No right way to do this. You have to find your way pretty much yourself. But this making sense? Do you? Okay, so I thought of this idea the other night when I was sitting in church and I wrote something down. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sitting on stage. I'm supposed to be engaged. Sometimes I get an idea and I scribble something down and then I'm back listening to the message. So I'm not Googling anything, but sometimes I'm like, oh man, this is an amazing idea. And I was thinking as he was talking the other night about something about, like, he was talking about simple things and everything, and I'm thinking, like, the thing that really stops you from being creative as a writer or getting to the business of doing it is because you are thinking of creating something artistic and not really focusing on the elements that make it. Like all painters start with brushes and paints and mixing and everything like that and the lines and everything. You know, they go to school for that, learning how to draw the lines. Mindy is an artist, and she has done lots of graphic work. What's the first thing they teach you to do when you're in art class? I mean, besides drawing naked people. I'm sorry, don't. I mean, that happens in art classes. I'm sorry. Yeah. What's that? Yeah, fundamentals, right? Okay, what is the fundamentals? What are the fundamentals of your language, whatever language that is? French has different fundamentals than English. But, you know, it's basically connecting the words together in a series that makes sense. And then when you say something, you put a period there. And then you stop. Then you say something else. And then hopefully what you said after the first sentence relates to the relates. They go. And then they, you know, but, you know, how does that process happen? Anyone in here? How many do a little bit of writing every day? A little bit of writing every day. Okay. All right. How many words is that for you? Elizabeth, that's 15,000 words. I know, I've seen your... Elizabeth is famous, and she's apologetic when she turns in her exams in my class because they're full of, like, you know, they're... I ask a question, and Elizabeth goes off. It's amazing, which is the way it is when you're a writer. You just go off. You just... She doesn't self-edit, so that's good, too, because when you self-edit, then you... Oh, Pam is here. Pam's also written a book. Pam can help us here. I'm the only one in the round table. It's a round table with one chair right now, which is me. And so, okay. So I've written some notes here. about this. I got some philosophical things, and then I got some practical things that I can give you. So we'll start with the philosophical things here. Creation is always about creating. Oh, that's profound. Just say that to yourself. Creation is always about creating something from nothing. Creating is always about creating something from nothing. So this is what the story is in the Bible. God created the heavens and the earth. It doesn't tell us where he got the materials from that. So God created the heavens and the earth. And this is, you know, this is the thing. You might be looking for a better method or another tool to get you into the process of writing something, to get you into the process of practicing, but those rarely work. The tools are not what makes you produce. You know, the creativity does not come from the tools that you had. At the beginning, when you're starting to write, you know, your resources are maybe very slim. You probably sat down, some of you, Ciara, you've done it, right? You sat down and you've got an assignment. I have nothing to say. Right? Is it true? Yeah, you've been there. Pam has been there too, right? You sit down at the computer or your paper, I have nothing to say. I'm like, you know, there's like, so what do I do at that point? You know, when you start, you have very few resources. Don't look for like a, you know, the internet is a poor stimulator. Trust me. I've tried that. Oh, if I just wait, if I just get on the internet, a little cruising on the internet, then I'll be more motivated. You're just like putting off you're just putting off the work until later. Because it is work. You know, it is work. You know, people think art is not work, you know. In the other room, we have like musicians talking about music and how that's work. It's like being good at music takes work. It takes concentration. It takes knowing the notes, how to put the notes together. Singing as a group in harmony takes someone being able to control their voice. You know, all people controlling their voice so that the chord actually sounds like it's a real chord and not something from outer space, not a communication. So writing is like this. There's no getting around the basic elements of like learning what words mean, how to put them together, and putting them together in like a practice sessions that require some discipline. So you just start with what you have. It's like I've sat down at a, you know, and just like I just don't feel like doing this morning. And that's the first sentence that goes into the book or into the computer file. I just don't feel like doing this morning, but I've made a commitment. I know I have to. I want to do it. I don't, you know, I'm at the point now that if I don't really do this, my personality is connected. You know, the way that I feel about myself, I mean, maybe it's bad. I don't think it's bad. It's just like, if I don't do some writing during the course of the day, I could be a very agitated, angry kind of person. And what is wrong with me? It's like, if I don't eat, I can get agitated. If I don't write, I can get agitated. It's like something has to happen. It's like in my mind, I am given to this, and I have to put something down and get something going. So you start with what you have. You have your identity. I said that. Who are you? Who are you? Like, that's the thing. You're being yourself. Writing is intensely personal work. Even the novels that are written that have become the great novels that change people's lives, they are very autobiographic in their essence. You know, like C.S. Lewis wrote these fantasies that are called the Chronicles of Narnia, and really they were like voyages that he took in his own heart as a young person. And that he put them down for other people to read and enjoy. And after he had become a Christian, he saw the Christian elements that he could work into this. So who he was, who you are, is going to really show up on your paper. And if it doesn't, then you really are, what do we call you? You are a flatterer. Okay, you are a flatterer, which means you're telling us stuff that doesn't really have weight. That's why the word sounds so much like feather and flutter in the English. Flattery is a killer. It's really a killer. The proverb says it. It works ruin. It's like it has. It's like it's faint praise. It's like you say something that's not true. You say something that's dishonest. And I'm saying when you start out writing, you might be very, it's better just to be honest. I really don't feel like doing this. I don't really have much to say today. I really don't know where I'm going with this. And just work that process out in your mind and heart on a piece of paper, in a computer file, right? You know, maybe you're bothered by someone. Maybe you'd really like to write a Psalm 109 email to someone. You know Psalm 109? It's the psalm that you pray when you want somebody dead and their whole family dead, and you want their dead to wind up as homeless people on the streets forever. You ever felt that about that? David apparently did, or I think that's a psalm of Asaph. I'm not sure. Whoever wrote that psalm was very honest about the way that he felt about things. So honesty is your best policy. Be honest. And that's where pencil comes better. You can be honest in this and erase it, or you can burn this. If you got some honest opinions about something, someone, and you put it in paper, you can burn it and it won't be seen ever again. But remember, every idle word that you speak, that's what it says. Idle words written or harsh words written, I'm not so sure. I think they're sort of a confession of sorts. Psalm 109 seems to agree with me. So identity, who are you? The tools, I said that, they don't make you the artist that you want to be. But the work does, the work that you do. And I'm not going to sugarcoat this. It is work. There are days, it is work for me. It is not I do not enjoy, I don't sit down at my typewriter or at my computer or with my notebook or start writing and start thinking, oh, this is such a walk in the park. This is amazing. It's hard. It's getting the words right is hard. Mark Twain said, writing is easy. It's just about crossing out all the wrong words. Which was his way of saying, writing is hard. A lot of sentences that you put down stink. And it's not about forcing yourself to a quality that's that you're trying to, the quantity to use this in the English, quantity is the thing that will produce the quality. There's way more stuff that I don't want anyone to see in my notebooks. There's way more stupid things that I've written. My wife started telling me, she started saying, can I say something to you? I said, well, you are my wife, and you are, you are more than my friend. And yes, correct me, please. She said, could you stop, doing things that begin with the same letter all the time? I said, you mean alliteration? She said, whatever it is, just stop doing it. She said, because it's, annoying, Everything you do has to I did it today. I did it on the bus from Washington. We were talking about something. What did I say? The three things that are important are prayer and preaching. And then because I wanted to keep the P's going, I said, and the pages. So the secret to a good church is the prayers that we pray, the preaching that is done, and the pages that we read. And I'm saying, I just violated. I heard my wife saying, stop doing that. It's like, so.
Some of us can only remember one letter. So sometimes it's a help.
I know. And, if anyone who watches Wheel of Fortune, know that if you get the puzzle that has all the same letter, you get an extra $1,000 if you get the right letter. It's like Wheel of Fortune. I don't know if you have that in other countries, but it's a game. Yeah. Okay. You have it in France?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. So, the tools don't make the artist, the work does. So you have to be work, honesty and integrity. Can I figure out, first of all, who am I? That's a good question. Who am I and who am I writing for? Okay, I got a twofold answer for that. Who you are, identity, I am a writer. I've decided I'm going to put things down on paper, share them with other people. Because writing, if you do writing, you want it to be read, okay? Unless you're Blaise Pascal. And then you sew all your writing in a coat, and then after you die, everyone reads it, correct? Is that the way it went? French? Sort of, right? Okay, so that's what happened. When they found Blaise Pascal's jacket inside, he had sewn all these little sayings in there. They're called pensées. Is that right? Thoughts? Yeah. All right. What's that? I wonder what it smelled like at that point. I don't know. Did he ever get married? Was he a bachelor? Blaise? I don't know. Okay. That's a good... I cheat church history. I got till next spring to talk about him. I have to figure out what his life was like. Okay. So who you are as a writer, so your identity, and then all the other stuff that you have, that's a good the good proverb to look at, Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of a friend. That's one part. And then later in that, it says, as face, something about looking into the face of the water, you look back and you see your face there. But like when you look into a pool of water, the face is kind of blurry, and there's a lot of things behind that. You have histories, you have experiences, you have things that are going to come out in your writing, the way that you're thinking about things. So that's okay. That's who you are. So who do I write for? That's like, okay, this is a trap. This is maybe the biggest trap. Like you've been assigned like to give a speech, you've been assigned to write a report, and you get frozen in this prospect. You get trapped, and I'm going to write a detox book for people who need to detox. You know, you're thinking about all the people you're going to help. This is a big trap, and this is like the biggest, what they call writer's block, which is a myth. It doesn't really exist. People who get writer's block never get paid for their writing because they never finish it, because they're always blocked and they, you know, they don't turn it in. Writing is never done, but there are deadlines. There are times when you have to like stop writing and just turn in what you have. It's so, you know, I could fiddle with something all the time. I'm just reading. I have a couple of ideas for a couple of plays next year, and I want Carolyn to look at them. So I was just reading through it, and I got lost in one, and then I realized I had to come over here and talk to you guys. And I'm like sitting there going, I can't like just keep fiddling. Can I just keep fiddling with this? Oh, he couldn't say it this way, and I'm already like starting. So you got to have like a deadline for that. So the trap is what I'm saying. I'll get to the question now. Who am I writing for? That's certainly, but really the first thing is write for yourself. Write for yourself first, and then worry about who's going to read it later. Okay, I don't know if this will free you, but it freed me. Like, I write for myself first, and then I worry about, like, and I take a lot of risks. Like, I had a blog that I posted last week about, like, it's on the GGWO website. It's about, about demon possession. So I don't know a lot about demon possession. I was saved in a Pentecostal church, and I saw people that, like, were, like, prayed over to get rid of demons. I don't know whether they really were delivered of demons, but, like, you know, I saw people shouting and shaking and pouring oil. I mean, like, pouring oil, like, on this one guy. He was, like, poor guy. He smelled like Pompeian Olive Oil Company by the time he left that meeting there. So, but I wrote this thing about, you know, and I noticed something in the passage. I noticed something in the passage in Luke 8 that the demon-possessed man met Jesus. And, like, I'm saying, the demon-possessed man met Jesus. So that's like, so in my mind, I took a risk and wrote something that I've gotten some comments on, like, well, how do you know? I said, well, it says in the scriptures that the demon-possessed man met Jesus. So I'm saying that they had possession of him. There were thousands of demons in him, but they didn't have total possession of him, because somehow he managed to make a decision to go down to the beach and meet Jesus. And I said, well, didn't the demons want to confront Jesus? Doesn't sound like it. So I'm just saying, like, so I, you know, I wrote that for myself. I just, that was one time where it was like beautiful. I'm like writing, hey, this is really good. I'm really enjoying this. I'm having a great time writing this whole story about how the demon man, and I'm thinking about demons and like, how is it going to work? So I wrote that. And like, so did I care about who I was writing for? You know, then I started thinking about, like, who's going to read this? How are they going to read it? And then I started, like, figuring out the kind of pieces that should, that could clarify this kind of idea. So, first of all, you know, you write for yourself. Who you're writing for, first you write for yourself, and then you worry about who you're writing for after that. All right? And that's another. So these are all philosophical kind of things. And the last thing is, like, it sounds like just basic thing, but you really have to sort of decide, is there something you want to say? Is there something you want to tell people? Is there something you want to tell your notebook? Is there something you want to tell? So that's like part of it. Like on the days when I don't feel like writing and I say I don't really feel like doing this, then I have something to say right then. And so, you know, those kind of questions you have to really answer. You know, who you are, who am I writing for? You write for yourself first. You write And then you write, think about who's going to read it, and then what do I want to say? So that's, you know, that's the basic part of that. Any questions to this point? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that's a word for it. I mean, that could be a word for it. I mean, those are those words that they all created in writing teachers. You know, most writing teachers, you know, I was fortunate because the writing teachers I had were actual writers. You know, they were actually people who wrote books. You know, some people you get and they just want you to diagram sentences and then they give you the forms. Like, brainstorming is one word for it. Clustering is another word for it. You know, I have my own form of brainstorming, but that's when I get assigned something. Because sometimes you get writing that is assigned. That's like, I get assigned to write something. Might be an email for Pastor Schaller. I need you to write this, and I'll look at it. And then, you know, I do some, you know. So sometimes writing is assigned, and then I have to figure out what I'm going to say. So I have a method that I use that's like, I think about five words related to the topic, and then I think about those words. Then I think about five more words related to the topic, and then I think about two more words. And so by that time, I have like 12, you know, 12 words. And you know, five nouns, five verbs, five nouns, five verbs, two nouns, two verbs. You know what nouns and verbs are, right? Yeah. Every language has them, right?
So that's what you're calling clustering?
That's just a formula that I did so I could get things down on paper. So clustering is like grouping those words into sentences that could be. Brainstorming is like getting everything out of your head. That's what they call it. And then clustering is like grouping the words that go together. And so if you can do that, you know, that's a pattern that I follow, but I don't think it's original with me, but I haven't read it anywhere. It's just like, that's, you know, I'm sure Dr. Sheets back at Towson University taught me how to do it, because he was like, you know, I was like unsaved. And like, I wrote, the first essay was, what would you do on the last day of your life? And I wrote something stupid, like go to a Led Zeppelin concert. And he's like, you know, like saying, like, what kind of sorry life do you have? I've come to find out he used to be a monk, but then he became an English teacher at Towson University. So Dr. Sheets, like, I had a very painful semester with him in composition. But I, you know, he said, you make too many mistakes. You're writing too fast. You're like writing for everyone. You're writing for me. And he's the one that like taught me these things about writing for yourself first, then write for me. And so by the end, I wrote this beautiful essay about the final thing. If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? That was all he wrote on the board. Okay. And then he wrote another one, footprints in the snow. You know, and that was it. And then there's three phrases that I can't remember. And he wanted us to, like, that was going to be our final essay. 1,000 words. You got 2 hours. Here's your little notebook. You know, those little blue notebooks that you have in college. Here you go. Get writing. So I wrote two. I wrote, you know, he was so impressed because I wrote one about the tree, because if I was a tree, I wrote I'd be a Christmas tree because everyone would be bringing presents to me. So that was like off the cuff, and I did that, you know, totally silly and everything like that. And then I got into another mode, like the one footprints in the snow was like the danger of lying. Once you take a lie, it's one footprint in the snow. And can you retrace your steps perfectly without anyone finding it out? So that's the kind of mind I had back when I was unsaved. And you see how God has redeemed it all to this point. But that was like Dr. Sheets, he said, I've done a lot of work with you. I'm very proud of what I've done with you. And so, you know, wherever he is out there, you know. So, but we had little conversations, you know, he was a good critic, and obviously. And I learned a lot about my faith, too. I became a Christian before I took his next class. And he, like, helped me wrestle with some of that because he was a Jesuit monk and I had left the Catholic faith and entered into something else. So, you okay? Anyone?
Did he follow you? Like, did he know you went on to be a drummer?
I don't know. No. My high school journalism teacher does. She's my friend on Facebook. She's always commenting on us. Like, she's so surprised. Well, of course they are. It's not that I was like a radical, like dope smoking, motorcycle riding guy, you know, in high school. I wasn't like a troublemaker or anything like that. But, you know, I was, you know, people who've seen my, I was a serial dater. It's like that was all. So Mrs. Backscheider got all my broken hearts. I mean, my broken heart, because I was the one usually getting dumped, but that's the way it was anyway. But I found the right woman, or rather I should say found me. That's for another workshop. Okay. All right. So I got some practical things to tell you now. So let's get to the practical stuff. Yeah.
I have one question.
Yeah.
I think it's something that you said, don't self-edit. That is practical.
Yeah. Okay, like some people are constipated about their writing. It's like they will not get the next sentence out until they've cleared their colon. So you have a mind. So there you go. Ciara's back there laughing. She said, man, that's an illustration. You got to write that one down. I hope they're recording this. But this is like, if you self-edit, like the thing is like when you start going through like your writing, if you want to start getting some, making some progress, I suggest you like just like write in some bursts and edit later. Write first, edit later. That's a practice. Like, so if I am a journalist and I have a story to deliver in an hour, if I'm self-editing and I'm like trying to make every word right as I write it and trying to not just like get like totally stuck on the right phrase, just like let them flow. Like let the phrases go and then chuck out the bad. Like Mark Twain said, you cross out the bad ones later on. Okay. So these are some practical things here, getting started, like, so, and then these might, I'm just really sort of like repeating stuff that other people have taught me, and so it's not like original with me, but, you know, like, the thing is, what are you going to write about? That's the first thing. That's, you got to know what you're going to write about, so that's a decision to make. And okay, so I'm going to write a book. Okay, that's a big thing. Like, how big of a book are you going to write? Like, I just finished 28,000 words on Psalm 119. It took me a long time to do it. 28,000 words is not a huge book, but it's 1,000 words each on those 22 stanzas and some introductory things. So I just finished it. So hopefully we'll get it published sometime, right? Sometime in this year. So, what did I decide? I had to decide what that book was going to be about. Psalm 119 is my material. I'm going to like try and figure out. Then I sort of stumbled as I was writing on, well, it's about the word. There's so many things about the word in this context. Let's write, each stanza really glorifies and magnifies the word of God and its process and the thing that it does in our heart. So I started out doing that. And then I found like kind of interesting thing about Hebrew letters, and that sort of shaped some of the things I started writing later on, because Hebrew letters were, you know, Pastor Ben could tell this more than I could, but they were started out as pictograms, which most Chinese letters are pictograms, which means they were pictures, and then they developed into cursive and that kind of thing that we do even worry about cursive anymore. But fonts, they developed into the font that they are. And so that was like, so I had to decide that. So how did I get it finished? The way that I finally got it finished, at least the last 12 chapters that I had to get finished by May 1st. I missed the deadline by 5 days, but I had to set a word count. It's like I said, I have to do 1,000 words every day to get this done. Now that, I backed myself into a corner there, but that's a good thing. I decide what I'm going to write about, and then I set a daily word count. It can be 300 words. You know who John Grisham is? Have you ever heard of him? He's written all these like sort of lawyerly books about detectives and everything like that. His first book, which became a bestseller almost right away, he wrote on the train. He wrote on a train in Chicago, and he wrote 300 words a day. One page. He would feel, so about 300, one page in a moleskin notebook is about 300 words. So he would write one page on a legal pad, just one page a day, big letters, writing it, just getting it done, just filled the page, 300 words every day, traveling into work. So that was his daily goal. So, and then he found out that he had, you know, by the time he like kept writing a few months, he wrote the, you know, whatever his first book was, he wrote through it and, you know, suddenly he had 40,000 words. That's a lot of days of writing, you know. Now, some days you're going to like, you know, you're not going to want to stop. Those are great days when you don't want to stop. Like you're at 1,500 words and 2,000 words in a day. You know, it can happen that way. The first one was know what you're going to write about. Make a topic, choose something. What are you going to write about? Sometimes it's assigned. You get an assignment, but other times you have the choice. You know, Chris wrote about detoxing. What have your books been about, Pastor Texier? What's that? Yeah, what's your next one about? Genesis 22. commentary on Genesis 22. So he's going verse by verse. Verse by verse. So this is a good thing. Okay, so if you're writing this kind of thing, verse by verse, then already the structure is there for him. But you set a, do you have a time you when you write? You set a daily goal. So that's the next part of it. You set your goal. You set your time. Like, this is like basic life skills, you know, and that's why I'm saying it's work. Writing is not, good writing takes a lot. If you read something and it says that was a very easy read, that was a writer who worked very hard, canceling out all the words that don't mean anything. So you set your word goal, word count, and then you set a time to work on your book every day. It could be that you have a space, you know, it could be before you go to sleep at night. That could be, I've developed an office, but it hasn't been used yet. Like, my wife says, you got that light in there, and you got that table, and you got all the books there. When are you going to start doing that? Well, I said, I work so much better at the kitchen table with the smell of the coffee, you know, and then I see your lovely face when you come down from, you know, so that, and that just stops the writing, like, right there. So you set a time to do that. You set a time when you do that. Like, I've done, like, two things. Like, there's a couple hours a day. There's a couple hours a day that I've set aside for things that are not related to my job here. Well, actually, writing is. But I write for this hour, as many words as I can write, and then I play my guitar for this hour. And it's like, that's like, I've brought the guitar back into my life, you know, because I went to see Mercy Me, and a guy that I went to school with was playing in the band. And I'm like, man, I could have been someone. And my wife said, you are someone. You are my husband. Yeah. I said, okay, that's good. Thank you. Okay, so set a time to work on your book every day. And if you can, like, that's why I say the kitchen table is, like, good for me to write and sketch, because it's the same place every day. So I have, like, developed, like, sort of a habit of life now. I get up and I walk through my neighborhood reading the Psalms out loud, praying. And then when I come back, I start, like, writing something that's on my heart for that. And so we'll see what that turns into. So that's the first phase, those four things. What are you going to write about? Set your goal for words. Find a place to do it, a time and place to do it. And that will, you know, I mean, these things seem like, well, writers are, like, so creative. We just, like, wear wild shirts and cool colored pants and everything. You know, I know. And I'll just stand behind there. I didn't buy these pants for myself, but, you know, anyway, I just got to wear them. I celebrate convention with them every year. Everyone mocks me. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I'm secure, I think. Anyway, so the next thing is, like, what kind of book are you writing? How long are you writing it? 10,000 words. Most of Pastor's booklets, that's something you should know. I wrote, like, there's 800 and some booklets. I probably wrote 790 of them. Over the course, 800 of those booklets over the years. So that's part of my work there. Editing's a different part, but that was there. So 10,000 words is like a small, is a small book kind of thing. 20,000 words. And again, like, if you look at these numbers and you're thinking, like, if you think of the arrival number before you get, you know, you're going to really lock yourself up. Think of what you're doing every day and work at it every day. Some days will go better than others. Thank God for those days. And give yourself deadlines. I'm going to do this. You know, I need to get so much done by the end of the week, you know. And that's what I woke, you know, at the beginning of the year, I said, I got to get these last chapters of Psalm 119 done. I just worked at it every day. I'm going to get this many parts of it done. And then I took off the weekend. But every day during the week, it's that. And then get some feedback early. Like, give it to someone to look at. Give it to someone you trust, someone who's honest with you. You look at, I have a wife that can do that for me. So, you okay so far?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Let's see. What's the? I thought I have one more. Okay. Here's maybe this is answering some questions that you have. Like, this one writer, his name's Jeff Goins. You can find him online. He has some things. Some of these things I got from him. Some of these things I got from someplace else. But this is like, keep an inspiration list, like, you know, what you want to write about. So that's another thing. Keep an inspiration list. Like I said, the other night I'm on stage and I got an idea and I'm like going, what am I going to do here? slid my notebook out, wrote the idea down, and then got engaged in the message again. So that was you know. Remove your distractions. That's another thing. Like, you know, if you can, you know, sometimes there are things, you know, the internet is a tremendous distraction. So writing on the computer, you know, I think I'm writing in notebooks now because writing on the computer is more of a distraction than it ever was because I get emails and I get things like that. So I have to writing in the notebook is actually maybe like I'm going back to the Stone Age. Well, there was no Stone Age. I'm sorry. We don't believe in the Stone Age. God created everything, and Adam and Eve was put in a garden, not in a stone cave. So I go back to like the old-fashioned days because the technology today just gets me off and running. I'll start looking up things about the ravens, you know. Because so removing the distractions is a good thing, especially as you get moving on it and you're starting to get to the place now. Now, okay, so who will read my stuff? That's a big question. Who will read my stuff? That's like, will people read it? Well, that's a good question. You are in a great, you know, back in the olden days, they would write letters. Everyone would write letters to each other, and people would keep diaries, and no one would keep journals, and who would read them? Usually they wouldn't be read until after you're dead, a journal and everything like that. But now you live in the wonderful age of social media. I mean, if you are participating in social media, and I do, I participate in social media. I've connected with a lot of old friends, and I really feel that that's been beneficial to me, and like my old journalism teacher. So, you know, who will read your stuff? If you write something that you think is profound, then you can take the risk. Now, the thing is that, yeah, you probably get some comments on that. Are they going to be good comments? Like, some are not. I'm, like, very careful about what I put on social media because it's there forever, as young people are learning. You can write something and it can cost you a college admission because you were stupid and 16 and you wrote something bad about black people. And you shouldn't have wrote it, but you did. And now it's in the world of the internet and everyone can find it. So just be very careful. But, you know, you have platforms to be read are many nowadays. Like, so, you know, so you can, you know, you can create your own news feed and everything. I have my own blog called I Write. That's it. It's got a little Van Gogh picture on the top of it. And I don't post on it enough that I should, but that's where I put some things there. And I just, you know, do I have a lot of followers? Not really. That's not really my, it doesn't really matter. It's like, I'm not trying to be famous. I am famous in the right place right now. I'm famous in heaven and it's in the right place, you know. But that's, you know, that's the, and I already said the last one, don't edit as you go. Don't edit as you go. Don't get constipated in the process. Just like learn to like let go and get things moving. And that'll be a great release for you. Okay. All right. Did I say enough? Any questions, comments? Yes, Jason. Do I meditate on much I'm writing? I don't know. See, I grew up with the Beatles, and then the Beatles broke up after they went to India, and we were all brokenhearted because we were sure the Maharishi made them break up. So I don't really like meditation. So, I think writing is I see writing as a form of meditation. That's, you know, that's pretty much what it is. Yes, Ciara?
Neither North nor South, nor Washington or New York, and I wrote all of this thing, and I would never, and I put it on Facebook because like people here were like saying, "Yeah, what do you think of Baltimore now?"
like people who didn't grow up here. I grew up here, and I'm like, I've been through the 67 riots. I've been through a lot of things in Baltimore. You know, it's not the first time that Baltimore blew up. And I wrote something, and I just put it out there. I'm just going to put it out there, see what happens. And it wound up getting 300 shares. And I met a woman that is now a lawyer in New York City, and we went to a Fleetwood Mac concert together back in 1977. It's like, she's like, this is the most true thing I've ever read in my entire life about Baltimore. I'm so happy. And next thing you know, she said, would you come to New York? Let's have coffee. That hasn't happened with everything I've written, but I think you just decide sometimes that, like, writing, once you post it, once you publish it, you are really sort of opening your heart to people. And that's the risk you have to, like, take. It's sort of like dating, you know? I mean, I don't mean to... Philippe will cover that later in the week. But it sort of is, like, who do I want to read this? And Facebook is like, yes, I understand. So I'm just saying, be very careful. If you look at it and you think it's, you know, you think it's profound, it is profound because it came, some sort of inspiration gave it to you, then you just share it there. I mean, but you know the groups, you know, that you say. Yes, Marion. It takes money. It's a very, you know, you can be very successful at it. People have been very successful at it. It does, like Bernadette O'Connell has a really great story about the struggles she's had. Her daughter has had a learning issue, and she's gone through a whole process with that. I think everyone knows that here. And she wrote this great book, and somebody said, we will print this for you. And that's different than saying, we will buy it and publish it in your name under our impress. They said, give us $6,000 and we'll print this for you. And she's like, now sometimes that $6,000 will get you artwork and a catalog. And like, what is it? It's West Bow Press is a subdivision of Thomas Nelson Publishing. And they have a whole thing. For $1,000, they'll professionally edit it and design a cover for you. And people can print to order, which means like it exists. It's never printed until someone decides to print it on their own machine. And then there's another level there. I think there's like 7 levels there. West Bow Publishing. West, like the East West, West Bow, all one word, like a West Bow, like the bow and arrow, West Bow Publishing. And so, and they're very good. And I've talked to those people about a couple of things that I wrote earlier, and they were honest with me. This is how much it costs, you know. So that's like the idea of sending a manuscript to someone and ever saying, oh, this is so amazing. That doesn't happen so much anymore because there's so many platforms where you can share. And usually what happens is once you share and you get a following, then like a publisher will say, hey, you're writing good stuff and people like it. And we'd like to publish your book because we can make money off of it. It's basically that's the business process, you know. Yes, Elizabeth. Well, you have less coffee? Drink less coffee? No, I mean, I'm just saying, my brain works a mile a minute, so. Oh, yeah, when you talk it? Some people write their books that way. They dictate them. Yeah, I guess you could dictate it into, hey, Siri, take a note. Do you have a Siri? I have a Siri. Yeah, you could. Hey, Siri, take a note. She'll write it down for you. Put it in your notes. It happens. I mean, it's scary that Siri knows so much about me, but it happens. Yes, Pam.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, portable MP3 players are like, I can't remember who it is, but one of the more popular novelists, he's spoken all of his books, like driving. It's not Stephen King. That would be scary. Can you imagine Stephen King dictating, like, Carrie, and you're listening to it, and, like, that'd be like, you know, oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, a point that I don't know inspired by God or anointed by the Holy Spirit? Can you sense where God is writing with you or God is telling you something?
Yes, I do. I mean, and that's a marvelous time, but not all the time. I enter into the work. I mean, I used to be like, when I was editing for Dr. Stevens, it was like I knew that I was on the right track because, like, it would be, I could almost see Pastor, like, preaching on top of the computer as I wrote the book. Because I was taking raw transcripts. Like, there is a series of messages, and you'll find it. There's, like, 6 messages, and Pastor Stevens gave them to me. One of my first assignments when I became his writer, I want this principle of the eternal is to be reduced to 20 pages, maybe 15. I'm like, oh, Pastor, there's 6. He said, you can do it. You're a gift to me. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right, I'm a gift to you. And then it was amazing because, like, some people criticized some of the things I was doing. And then right from the pulpit, he says, God sent me an editor. My books sound like professional writers doing it, and he is. I'm up in the mother's room, which was elevated in Lenox, and you could look down on the stage with my son Timothy, who's now 33. So yeah, there were times when I was like, when I knew that I was like doing the right thing with his work. It was like editing's a whole different thing. Like, if you're editing something, you have to enter into, like, and not everyone can do it. Like, I enter into the person. I think about the person. I read a lot of Dr. Stevens' books. I listened to a lot of his messages. But, you know, spoken word is different, and I had to translate it into written word, and I had to keep his character in it. And so, I mean, you know, you can buy one of the books over there. They're 3 for $10, and you can decide whether I did a good job. So, but, so last question before we, yes. Okay. Okay, daydreaming. Go ahead. Okay.
No, but just like how it can be good to just, like, the Pastor Scheller talked the other night about being too busy.
Yeah.
And how good it is to actually have this downtime when you just, maybe you're just really quiet and you're not doing anything.
Mm. Oh, what's the difference? Well,
yeah, because
you
can also.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a big question. That might be for the rap session tonight after the service. But I think you're answering his question, like meditation, like thinking about daydreaming, your imagination, how do you let it run, and how far do you go with it, and where do you put that stuff? And, like, you know, Pam has an option. I have an option with my notebooks, you know. I'm saying that's, I don't think it's sublimation. I think it's, you know, I would never look at it that way. I mean, if you start writing a book and it's like a fantasy book and you start living the fantasy, then yes, you have sublimated, you know. And I'd like, if C.S. Lewis started turning into one of his characters, he started turning into Aslan, then yes, he's sublimating. But I think we are grounded in truth. So you just, like, you know, I think you just, you know, you can, I think God will stop you. Or arrest you in some way. And that, so. Well, I'm just saying, like, if you have this in your heart to write something, then you have to get busy. I mean, and not busy in the bad way that we know of business, but it takes work, takes discipline, it takes concentration and everything. The imagination part of it, that's amazing. Like, sometimes your imagination is set free because of the discipline that you had. Like, because the discipline of getting something out onto a piece of paper will set free your imagination. It's like, well, I wanted to do this, and I really committed to this, and now all of a sudden I'm thinking way more because I've got something out of the way. And that's what I'm saying. Like, don't self-edit so much. Don't get like, into that, but get the writing going. Okay, so at 6 o'clock, you need dinner. And I need dinner. And then 7 o'clock, our service starts tonight. So I hope this has been helpful to you. Yeah, okay. All right, Lord, thank you. Bless all these people in expressing what they want to express. And we expect to see many things in many places from the hearts and minds that are here. In Jesus' name, amen.